Okay. Kanya, by the daughter of time. Upagudaha, being embraced. Nasta Shrihi, bereft of all beauty. Kripanaha, miser. Vishaya Atmakaha, addicted to sense gratification. Nashta Pratyaha, bereft of intelligence. Rita Aishvaryaha, bereft of opulence. Gandharva, by the Gandharvas. Yavanahai, and by the Yavanas. Balat, by force. Translation, when King Puranjana was embraced by Kala Kanya, he gradually lost all his beauty. Having been too much addicted to sex, he became very poor in intelligence and lost all his opulence. Being bereft of all possessions, he was conquered forcibly by the Gandharvas and the Yavanas. You can repeat. When King Puranjana was embraced by Kala Kanya, he gradually lost all his beauty. Having been too much addicted to sex, he became very poor in intelligence and lost all his opulence. Being bereft of all possessions, he was conquered forcibly by the Gandharvas and the Yavanas. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. When a person is attacked by the immolidity of old age and is still addicted to sense gratification, he gradually loses all his personal beauty, intelligence, and good possessions. He thus cannot resist the forceful attack of the daughter of time. Okay. Kanyo pakudo nashtashrihi kripano vishayatmakaha nashta pragyo ritaishvaryo gandharva yavanair palat. So om maganata mirandasha gananjana shlakaya chakshur and meditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So of course, modern society, sexual relationship or sexual attraction is considered very, very important. In fact, that's practically everything. You know, they sell products utilizing sex attraction. So people just don't give it up. I mean, I remember even, I'm not going to mention, one of my relatives, he was very old. And he had Parkinson's disease. That's where you shake a lot. So Parkinson's disease, and then he just, even though he was incapable of doing anything, he kept this big stack of what they call girly magazines in his closet. You know, big, big stack, like this big. Anyway, I'm not going to mention the name of them. So we've practically seen that the people just don't give up that attraction. Of course, Prabhupada tells the story about the king who asked the sage, when does one become free from sex attraction? And the sage replied, he doesn't. Goes on, and the king said, even to old age? You know, because the king was thinking, you know, when you get old, you know, you become a little bit more renounced and everything like that. So the sage replied, no. And the king said, I don't believe you. And the sage said, come with me. We're going to the hospital to visit someone. So they went to the hospital to visit this old man who was at the time of death. And at the same time, the sage said to the king, you bring your young, pretty daughter. She was about 18 or 20 years old, in the prime of youth. And so they brought her, and they all went to the hospital. And they opened the door. And there's this old guy, an old wrinkled, coughing. wrinkled, coughing up mucus. He had all the needles in his arms, intravenous stuff, you know, just drips, as they say. Like that. And so immediately, you know, you would think, you know, some great sage, pure devotee walks into the hospital room. You go, wow, Maharaj, please tell me, you know, what's this life all about? You know, why am I suffering? Like Maharaj Pariksit did. So you'd think that he would do that. But this person, this old man, or the soul in the old body, he just kept looking at the young girl. He didn't even see the sage. You know, because that's a fact. When your consciousness is only capable of being absorbed in certain things at one time, like certain aspects of this material creation, or like 5, 6, or 8 things at one time. There's a lot of other things happening you're not aware of. You focus your consciousness. Just like right now, we're sitting here and we're maybe aware of class, if you're lucky. But there's other things going on, like a pervert is cracking his whatever is there, his beans. So you're conscious of class, you're not hearing the cracking of the beans or the hum. There's some sort of hum, electrical hum going on here, or from the computer, or the light behind you. So you'll only be conscious of certain things. Magicians use this. Did you know this? You know, magician is? Magician means someone who makes believe he's doing magic, but actually he diverts your attention to something else while he's doing his magical trick, or the secret behind the magical trick. And that way he can cheat you. Anyway. So he wasn't seeing, getting back to the point, so this old man, he wasn't seeing the sage or the king, he was just seeing this young girl. So the king understood at that point that this attraction, the sexual attraction, desire, is part of the subtle body. So I thought it would be a good idea to analyze this sexual attraction. I mean, not in a gross way, because I mean the gross thing is obvious, you know why is someone attracted to someone else, but to understand how it is, and I don't want to offend anybody, how it is the most selfish expression of one's consciousness that there is in this material world. So it's good to analyze, like, what needs people are trying to fulfill through the sexual attraction, or the attraction between men and women, or even nowadays between men and men, or women and women, because it's all the same thing, you know. So I thought we'd do a little think tank. Of course, men and women, there's different needs they're trying to fulfill through this attraction. Let's start with men first, because we're the best. So what needs do you think men are trying to fulfill? Besides the gross, let's forget about the gross enjoyment, you know. What? Yeah, feeling close to someone, that's interesting. Feeling that someone loves them. Feeling that someone loves them. I'm going to add another one. You know, being the center of attention. Because men like that. I know women like that, too. I mean, I'm not saying only men like that. Being the center of attention, being worshipped, you know, having someone who is their devotee, basically. I'm not saying these are needs that are basic needs, but these are perceived needs, at least. I mean, basic needs are like food, shelter, things like that, community and other things. But these are perceived, let's say, desires. Let's use the word desires instead of needs. So what are the things that men are trying to fulfill?
Need to control.
Need to control, yeah, to be the boss. A man is the king of his castle, his home is the castle. Just like you see. I mean, this is also present in the animal species. Like you have the monkey. Monkeys, the there's one male monkey who dominates over his herd of female monkeys. And, of course, when another monkey becomes stronger, even if the monkey happens to be his son, he kicks the male monkey out of his herd, and then he takes over. So there's a succession, not a disciplic succession, but a succession of monkeys who are in charge of the herd. And so, all right, so, but you know the common denominator, I don't need to go over all the different desires of people. The common denominator, it's all about the me. Notice that? It's really interesting. Not about me per se, but, you know, me in terms of the individual. It's an I thing. It's all I and mine. I have this need. I have this desire. And you're going to be the object that fulfills that desire. And all right, so the women, what are they trying to fulfill by this?
Security,
yeah. Security. And they all, yeah, that's good. They want security, stability. They want someone who puts them on a pedestal too. You know, they want to be adored by someone. I mean, really. Nurtured. Men like to be nurtured. You know, I guess women too, I don't know. But men, men are looking for like a mother figure who will take care of them. And the women are looking for someone who will protect them and shelter them and guide them and all those things. But it's all about what they want, isn't it? It's interesting. So anyway, we don't need to get into any more of the details of it. But it's based upon what I or what you or what the individual wants. And so you see the other person as the wish-fulfilling object. I mean, just like I have my, you know, this, the iPhone. And I see this as an object that fulfills certain needs or desires that I have. You know, to listen to Prabhupada, that's a need. To listen to Prabhupada's classes, to be in touch with other people. Anyway, it's disposable, you know, when it goes bad, and change batteries, things like that. So the point I'm making is it's actually a very impersonal type of relationship. Although it appears to be the most personal, it is actually quite impersonal because you can substitute one object for another one. And the only reason why people in the past didn't substitute one object for another one was because of the principles of Dharma and fear. What I mean by fear, social pressure. You know, in the past, I mean, just like in America, some people were actually religious, but I think in general, people didn't get divorced because of fear of, you know, shame, social pressure like that. In India, that's a big thing, too. It was a big thing. That people are very much concerned about reputation. You know, what about all my friends? What will they think of me? Nowadays, of course, if you're not divorced, you probably won't have any friends. Because all your friends are divorced or they're living with someone without being married. Isn't it? In the old days, it wasn't like that. I mean, if you really want to have a social scene and friends, you had to have a wife or a husband. And divorce, everyone would look down upon you. You sinful wretch. Unless you happened to be Elizabeth Taylor, who was married, what was it, 8 times? Or something like that, 8 or 9 times. So, so that was one reason why people stayed with the same person. Another reason is Dharma, and actually even a higher reason is to please Krishna. So, I mean, that can actually transform. When the desire is to please Krishna, it transforms that selfish intention into something that's actually spiritual, can be utilized or offered to the Supreme Personality of God. You understand? So I'm not denigrating marriage per se. But I'm indicating, like, that the original intention of a man and women, or women and women, or whatever, you know, whatever, getting together is a very selfish motive, which can be dovetailed. You can dovetail. I mean, just like eating, too, is a very selfish thing. You know, I don't want to just concentrate on the man-woman thing. Eating things is very selfish because we want to enjoy the sense. We're not thinking of the good of the apple. You know, you're not thinking, you know, let me serve you, my dear apple. We're thinking, let the apple serve me by giving me a good taste. So, I mean, in general, all relationships within this world are a relationship with us and seeing the other person or whatever it is as an object and not considering the other person. Even though it may appear that we're considering the other person, but it's that consideration is based upon manipulation in many cases. Just like, you know, just like sometimes I was thinking about, you know, giving Christmas gifts, that if you don't give the Christmas gift to someone, then they'll get angry with you, and if you do, they'll be pleased with you, and they'll do more for you. So, you know, I'm thinking about this whole thing about Christmas gifts, too. So it's like that. You know, even when it appears to be reciprocation in many cases, it's actually a manipulation to increase the sense gratification. And then one becomes, the point is one becomes controlled by the other person because one becomes dependent upon the other person to fulfill their needs or desires. And that's why, like, a man becomes controlled by a woman becomes controlled by a man, right? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, I was just listening yesterday to Chaitanya Charitamrita to Lord Chaitanya's instruction to Sanatana Goswami. And, of course, very elaborate instructions. Some of the things, you know, I really have to study, like different types of expansions, Vaibhava Prakash, Vilas Prakash. Man, I don't understand all. I mean, I understand it, but I don't remember all the different. You understand? Like, Krishna expands in a rasa dance, it's Vilas Prakash, or something like that. I don't even remember what it is. It's a very complicated description. And then he's talking about all the Vaikuntha planets, how they have the different forms, the 24 different forms of Lord Vishnu, depending upon where the symbols are in Lord Vishnu's arms, and he's describing from one direction to another. Very elaborate description. And then he goes on to describe the most essential items for someone who is engaged in sadhana bhakti. And one of those items relating to the class is to give up attachment to the opposite sex. He talked about women there, but I'm just generalizing it. Attachment to the opposite sex. Or give up association with those who are attached to the opposite sex. And, you know, just I was thinking about it in relation to this verse. Why is that? And because it's perhaps the most selfish type of manifestation of consciousness in this world. Of course, like I said before, you know, there's means of purifying it, like a Krishna conscious marriage where one is very dharmic, and that purifies that particular attachment. And eventually one becomes attached to Krishna. So also I was thinking about when you have attachments, or which to someone, which are translated into demands for someone, that someone has to fulfill a certain amount of desire. The more demands you have of someone, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, when you become attached to something or someone, and you become lusty, and then you become angry. So the more attachments, I'm just extrapolating on Krishna's verse, you know, jayate vishayat pumsa sangaste shubhajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vijayate. The more attachments you have, the more angry you become at that particular object. So I was thinking about that in terms of the mundane reflections of the rasas in the spiritual world. Rasa means taste. Rati means relationship. But let's say the relationships in the spiritual world. And the relationship in the spiritual world, you have passive adoration, shantaras. Then you have dasha, the servant relationship. Then sakya, which is friendship. Vatsalya, which is the parental relationship. And finally, madhurya, which is the conjugal relationship. So I was thinking about the reflection of those relationships in this world and how when you go higher from, or in the material world, I guess it'd be lower, but when you go let's just, for principles of discussing the whole thing, let's say higher from just passive adoration to conjugal, that you have more demands on the person and more manifestations of anger. Let's give an example that someone is just like my let's say I'm a rock and roll star and someone is my passive fan. You know, they're just like standing there in the audience. Oh, Gurudev, Gurudev, whatever. Just like have my Facebook page. And every time I put something on, everyone says, oh, you're so wonderful. That's passive. You know, I was just thinking if someone like looks at the Hare Krishna's Facebook pages, the Guru's Facebook pages, they're going to really think we're a cult with a bunch of yes people. Isn't it? Like everything I put on, it's, oh, it's wonderful. I was looking at other gurus, and it's the same thing. It's just like, it's basically out of touch with society at large, isn't it? Because it's just weird. Because for a while I was thinking I'd let my mother look at it, but she'd probably like it that everybody's saying I'm wonderful. But as far as the people in general, like the intelligent class of people, the university people, if they look at that, they'll just think, oh, this is so weird. So anyway, let's go back. So let's say that's passive adoration. Someone is on my Facebook page and they're saying, you're so wonderful. So if they stop saying the wonderful, I don't really get that angry at them. It's just like, yeah, whatever. Whatever. I mean, I'm not, you know, I get some jollies out of people saying that I'm wonderful. But it's not really, you know, they're not fulfilling a lot of my needs. It's just like, you know, I can get someone else to say I'm wonderful. So, isn't it? So there's not so much anger in that relationship with a passive worshiper. So let's go on to someone who's a servant. I don't want to talk about that. Servants in Krishna consciousness. Let's talk about someone who works at your workplace and you pay him a salary or something like that. So then you have more expectations out of him that he'll perform in a certain way, he'll sell certain things if he happens to be a salesman, or he'll show at work at a certain time. And there's a little more anger if the person doesn't fulfill their duties. Of course, then what you do is you fire the person, right? You have expectations that they'll be punctual. You have expectations they'll perform. You have assessments, regular assessments, and everything like that. And if not, you just get rid of the person. A little more anger. All right, let's go up to friendship then. So friendship is the next one higher. So in friendship, let's give these. I was watching an interesting film about the Beatles last night. It was a film about George Harrison, a biography about George Harrison. It was put on. Mukunda Maharaj is in that biography, too. He did a very nice job. So it was describing how the Beatles, they were very good friends. But then they said how the friendship, Riley, turned to really intense animosity sometimes, because each one wanted to be the primary songwriter. George Harrison was sitting there, you know, having John Lennon and the other ones write the songs. Of course, Ringo never wrote a song. I maybe did one song, actually, that I remember. And so they were writing the songs, and George Harrison was sitting there fuming, even though they were all good friends. And finally, he just broke away from them, and he wrote famous songs like My Sweet Lord, and became a Hare Krishna devotee. So, but basically, it's described that even though they liked each other so much, and some of their recording sessions were so intense with hate, you know, that it was tangible. You know, you could touch the atmosphere, you know, the heavy atmosphere in there. So in other words, there was more animosity and more anger in that friendship relationship. I can give other examples too. I mean, we've all experienced that with friends. You sometimes get really angry if a friend rats on you. That means he tells on you. Or if a friend betrays you. It's just like, oh. You know, it's really much more anger, isn't it? Much more than if a passive worshiper decides to worship someone else. You know, Hare Krishna. Worship anyone you want. But friendship, and then after that, you know, parental relationship, there's so much demands. Like, you find parents sometimes rejecting the children, or even in some cultures, they even if the child gets married or wants to have a relationship with someone they don't like, they actually kill the child. Isn't it? Like, if the child wants to marry someone of a different religion, in the Jewish religion, of course, that was a shiksha. In the Muslim religion, it's an infidel. In the Hindu religion, what is it? It's a yavana or rakshasa or something like that, or malecha. I'm sorry, malecha. So I've seen parents reject children, get very angry at children. Parents spank children. I got spanked. And children just like demanding so much of their parents. And there's much more anger in that relationship, too. I mean, I find that. Not in every parental relationship, but I'm just saying when it, because there's more demands in general. And then finally you get to the conjugal relationship, and because there's so many demands that each person has of the other one, then there's much more manifestation of anger. I mean, most violence statistically occurs in the home between men and women. And there's so many arguments you need. Marriage counselors, so many marriage counselors, good business, being a marriage counselor. I mean, there's not so many counselors like for mothers and sons, you know. You know, I never went to a counselor because my mother spanked me. But there's all the, because the relationship turns really intensely violent. And there's all, so many words that are so painful between the two people, isn't it? Ooh, it just like strikes in the heart. Oh, I hate you. They're just like, I can't stand you. I should have married someone else. And it's just like, it's like putting a knife in your heart. It's much more painful, much more anger, because there's much more desire to enjoy the other person. Jayato, you know, the same thing. Frustrated desire. So that's why in the Vedic system, one is advised to gradually, as quickly as possible, give up that desire, because it's an exploitative desire that turns, it's lust only, kama esha krodha esha rajagunasa, that turns to anger. And ultimately, as it's described here, it says he becomes very poor in intelligence. So that's the same thing Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Jayato Vishak Pum Sang Sango Stesha Bajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodha Bajayate Krodha Bhavati Samaha Samaha Smriti Vri Brahmaha Smriti Vri Brahmaha, that means one loses intelligence. Vritti Brahmshad Nashtabhuti, then there's Nashtabhuti, that's losing intelligence, forgetfulness. Nashtabhuti Vinashati, then everything is lost. So this is really what's being dealt with here. Being bereft of all possessions, he became very poor in intelligence and lost all of his opulence. Being bereft of all possessions, he was conquered forcibly by the Gandharvas and the Yavanas. So anyway, so this is a little analysis. It's not meant to be derogatory towards marriage or anything like that, because a proper Krishna conscious marriage purifies that. As far as outside of the marriage relationship, there's no purification of it. It simply leads to more self-centeredness. So any questions or comments about these points? I know people get angry after this class, but anyway. Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? Yeah.
Aggravated anger?
Yeah.
Due to the
frustration.
Depth of the relationship.
Yeah.
Based on expectation.
Expectations, yeah. Demands. Actually, expectations, which are demands in the other place. That your business is to satisfy me in this particular way. My mother even said that to me. She said, you're supposed to become a doctor. I said, why? Because you're supposed to satisfy me. I mean, she at least was honest about the whole thing. Yeah, that's honest. I mean, most relationships are not as honest as that. They just get into, like, guilt things, like, they start crying, you know, something like that. Like the lady go, woo-hoo-hoo. And the man will just say, I don't understand. And she'll say, oh, you see, you're right. I'm right. You didn't understand. You know, anything he says will be used against you. It's like you should see a lawyer first. You know, anything you say can be used against you. You have a right to an attorney. Anyway, a little joke.
And we're thrown into relationships, and there are some underlying or overlying
demands.
Expectations.
Yeah.
So the method by which to remain detached
is not to have expectations.
It's just to
be.
Set them aside.
Yes, to be giving. That's right. And I've seen that in the relationship that I have a relationship with disciples that, you know, in the beginning I had set expectations. And when those expectations weren't fulfilled, then there was a tendency to get angry at disciples in any relationship. Let's just generalize the thing. And then I later came to the point, by the mercy of my disciples, I later came to the point of not having expectations. So when anyone did anything, it was actually much more joyful because everything it was being done out of voluntary service rather than me making a demand on my, you know, from me. So it was actually a much more joyful relationship when you don't have expectations of someone.
Yesterday you mentioned about Bhakti Siddhanta, heavy with his disciples.
Yeah.
And many instances in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu
was heavy.
Feigned anger.
Yeah.
In order to correct someone.
Yeah.
This application of anger.
That's fine because he wasn't seeing his disciples as need fulfillers for him. Because he was.
He would become angry.
Yeah, this anger was to help them. That's a different thing. I'm not saying that anger is necessarily bad. But when the anger becomes because of my frustration, that's the bad thing. That because I'm seeing you as the need for, you know, something that you're supposed to fulfill, a particular need of mine. And therefore, because that need is not being fulfilled, and I'm thinking of my need, I'm getting angry with you. But when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur got angry, he was simply thinking of the welfare of the person he was getting angry with. That's different.
Angry for the welfare of others.
Yeah, with the angry because he understood that was the best strategy to bring the person to the proper platform. Not because his need, not because, let's say, if I don't get my prasadam every day, I get angry as hell.
Yeah,
of course, I cook for myself. But anyway, so.
He talks about controlling anger and so forth. But in the purport, recognizes that there is anger
in Krishna's service.
Has to be utilized.
Yeah, like Arjuna using anger in the battle, etc. The Kshatriya doesn't get angry at the enemy. You know, he's just going to say, you know, love, peace, and love. You know, all you need is love. It's not going to work. But he's doing that to please Krishna, not for himself. So anger can be utilized in Krishna's service. Anyway, it's a good question. Good question. But generally in relationships, the more demands we have of someone in relationship, the angrier we become. So the point I was making is that generally in the conjugal relationship, there's more demands than any other type of relationship. So there's more anger manifested in that particular relationship than any other type of relationship. John,